Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, my name is Eric Eastep.
And I'm Scott Reedley.
And this is another episode of the City on a Hill podcast. If you've been listening for a while, you know that at the end of every episode, I guess Scott did one, but I say, if you have any questions, send them to podcast@newlifenw.com. And I am pleased to announce that, well, we had a couple. We have answered some questions just in the context of previous episodes. That was already coming up as a topic. We answered them in the context of an episode. So some of you already have some of your answers. And if you don't, you can send me an email at podcast@newlifenw.com. But there is at least one more question that we thought was a good one that would be worth bringing up. And then we got just a comment as well. And we're going to chat about that. So this is a Q&A type episode today.
Well, there you go. So here it is. Here's the Q. Somebody asked, so who is the Caesar in the United States? Or who is the Caesar for us when you're talking about Caesar? And we didn't really know. There are a couple places that we had talked about in the course of the couple episodes which referenced Caesar, and so we weren't really sure which one they're talking about, so we'll answer it kind of both ways, right?
We can answer all the ways.
whatever way you want to answer, right? So how would you start out answering that question? Who is Caesar for us?
Yeah, and I do think that's a great question. They added, along with that answer, how might the church's response relate to local officials? So depending on who Caesar is, what do you do? What do we do with that? So I think the first option for Caesar is probably from Matthew 22, which we did bring up. I don't remember what episode that was. It said pay your taxes or don't pay your taxes. I don't remember what it said. But from Matthew 22, when the Pharisees are trying to trick Jesus, they ask, who should we pay taxes or not? He pulls out the coin. Whose image is on the coin? Caesar. And then he says, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. So in that context, to whom should we pay taxes, I guess, would be the question. And I think one thing that's very interesting, we've already gone through types of government in past episodes. And one of the things that makes this fairly complicated in the U.S. context is that there are overlapping authorities in our context. We have it it's complex, shall we say. We talked about different types of government. You could have a king, you could have an oligarchy, you could have an aristocracy, you could have a democracy. We kind of have a mixture of all of those things. So in Jesus' time or Paul's time, the context was a little bit more simple. And Caesar, you go all the way up to Caesar. Everything is under Caesar. In our context, we have a federal government. We have a state government. We have local governments. All of our listeners are probably residing in a county and then probably in a city. We have a hamlet across the way. We have different governing authorities. So depending on where you sit, there may be multiple places that have rightful, I'm losing the word, they rightfully anticipate your tax payments.
Or they have the right to impose taxes on you.
Right.
That would be the way that you would maybe.
And I would add another wrinkle to that. Mm-hmm. We're in a democratic system, in a democracy system, again, with some qualities that would look more like a king piece and more like an oligarchy piece or an aristocracy piece. So there's a bunch of overlapping types of government within our system to make it work differently. But within our system, be it the city, be it the county, be it the state or the federal, if you're at the state level, you've probably voted on whether you want taxes in your city. I know we voted on, just in the last election, we voted on a tax levy for I believe it was countywide for Sheriff Lovely. So it was a question to the small little democracy that was this county. Hey, do you want a tax levied against you to pay for the sheriff? And mm-hmm. it was voted in the affirmative. Mm-hmm. So the governmental structure that is appealed to there is strictly democratic. Mm-hmm. We asked you, do you want to be taxed? And we said, yes. That's the system working there. So in this context, that would be the Caesar there. And then if you go to like a state level, the democracy in play would be republic. Representatives given or elected to go to the state legislature and levy taxes or not. And when those representatives levy taxes, we elected them to be our representatives. And they said, okay, here's the tax we've decided to pay for XYZ and whatever. And you can disagree or not with those, but that's the system we have. That's a lot different than the Caesar system. And that'd be the same for the federal system as well. So there's a bunch of different ways taxes may be coming into your life. So there's a bunch of different ways. There are a bunch of different authorities you would be interacting with.
And the reality is, I mean, what you would say probably is that the question posed to Jesus, should we pay taxes to Caesar, is really, should we pay taxes to those who have the right to impose taxes? Mm-hmm. And I would assume from Jesus' answer that he would be saying yes, mm-hmm. that you should pay taxes to, you know, you skipped over like property tax levies that you vote on for right. school districts that are even smaller than your counties. But yeah, you've got them kind of all the way through.
Right.
And they get you coming and going. But the reality is that, you know, I would understand Jesus' word there when he's talking about Caesar to include anybody that has the right and the authority to levy those taxes. That's the person you should pay taxes to, mm-hmm. or the organization you should pay mm-hmm. taxes to.
And to make it a little bit more complicated, Caesar's the one distributing the money. Holding up that form of currency, as it were. And in our system, what's holding up that form of currency? It's the government as well. Mm-hmm. So to put one more layer on that, and people can disagree or agree with federal economic policy or tax policy or whatever, but at the end of the day, the system we have and the place God has placed us is one that organizes taxation that way, and that's how we pay our taxes.
But I think that's a really good question, because without asking the question, you've got to ask those kind of questions when you interpret the Bible. Who, you know, we don't have Caesar. I've never given a dime to a Caesar. Mm-hmm. But how do you then take that and apply it to us? That's mm-hmm. that's exactly the right question to mm-hmm. be asking when you're asking about Caesar.
Yeah.
So where's the other place that Caesar comes up in a discussion like this?
Yeah, I think the other would be in Acts, and I just recently read this in my quiet time, and just a fascinating, especially within the politics and church, and how do I act as a Christian within the politic thing or the governmental thing, and it's Paul dealing with controversy, and he appeals to Caesar. I can read this. This would be Acts 25. I think it's just after a riot, if I recall. So there's mm-hmm. a hubbub going on, and so they get Paul and they start talking to him. And Festus, one of the authorities below Caesar, wishing to do the Jews a favor. This is Acts 25:9-13. Said to Paul, "Do you wish to go up to Jerusalem and there be tried on these charges before me?" But Paul said, "I am standing before Caesar's tribunal, where I ought to be tried. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you yourself know very well. If then I am a wrongdoer and committed anything for which I deserve to die, I do not seek to escape death. But if there is nothing to their charges against me, no one can give me up to them." And then he puts in this zinger, "I appeal to Caesar." Then Festus, when he had conferred with his council, answered, "To Caesar you have appealed, and to Caesar you shall go." And that's, I almost see it like a courtroom drama. He does this defense, and he's eloquent, and he's got this profound thing. And the courtroom almost gives an exhale, and then he says, "I appeal to Caesar." like he broke glass in case of emergency, and he appealed all the way to the top. And the rest of the story, he ends up going all the way to the seat of the government of Rome and goes before Caesar. So,
and interestingly, they have said, I mean, he more or less won his defense, and he wouldn't have had to go to Caesar had he not appealed.
Right, but he initiated the process.
Right,
that goes to Caesar. So one, I'll say in this context, I don't know what the quirk was in Roman law. That's a pretty interesting little quirk that you can, as a Roman citizen, apparently you can say, I appeal to Caesar under some lawsuit of some sort is going on, some charge against him, and he can appeal to Caesar, and that's a viable option. That's very interesting.
Well, it's almost like a game of Monopoly. You know, do not pass go, do not collect $200.
Right.
You know, and you go straight to Caesar. It appears that way.
Yeah. So,
so what's going on there, do you think?
In the context or for us?
Well, taking the question.
Oh, sure.
Who is Caesar?
Yeah.
For us, and how this apply to us?
Yeah. So again, our system is different. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a Caesar. One could look and go, who is the most prominent executive level person? And we could say, okay, that's the president. But obviously in our system, Paul knew his system well. If we know our system as well as Paul knew his system, we would know that I can't just appeal to the president. And that wouldn't really matter if I said that. There's a bunch of different jurisdictions, again, depending on what's going on. The appeal may be to something smaller, maybe a city thing. We talked about me getting a parking ticket. I appealed to I'm trying to remember the level. I don't even think it'd be a circuit court, just be a municipal court.
Right.
So very small level. We're down at the city level. I appealed to the municipal court because I held that they incorrectly charged me this ticket. So I appealed to the judge that was specific for that jurisdiction, and I knew which jurisdiction I was in. I was city of Portland. I wouldn't go appeal to the judge in Oregon City. That wouldn't get me anywhere.
How about one of those TV judges?
Judge Judy. That we go. That's a different, not governmental, folks. We really don't need to talk about that. So I just read a little thing about that. I was going to, doesn't matter. So there's different jurisdictions, and depending on what it is you're trying to appeal, you need to make sure you understand the jurisdiction. And again, we have these overlapping things. So sometimes that's really frustrating because there's overlapping governmental structures. But at another level, we call it federalism in our system. We allow things to work at different levels so that they don't have to be bound up by a single governmental structure like the federal government. We have states that run on their own. We have counties that by and large run on their own, informed by the state. I think cities and counties get their charters from their states. That might be different in different states. I'm not sure. But one of the things about that is you can't just go shop the jurisdiction you want to deal with. I remember kind of at the beginning of COVID, we were in a fairly restrictive state and others were in less restrictive states. And you could almost see people like looking over to another state and going, oh, I wish it was like that over there. I wish we were like that. I'm just going to appeal to the federal government. And I remember thinking that's not applicable. Mm-hmm. In our federalism system, there's a lot of rights to the states to govern in a way that they deem best helpful, specifically in things like a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Again, do you have to agree about how they do that? No, not necessarily. And it doesn't matter if you agree or not. But their states in our system are afforded a lot of latitude to do what they deem best in particular danger situations.
So what you're saying, though, is when you're thinking about appealing to Caesar number one, you don't get to say, I appeal to the president, because you've got the executive branch instead of the judicial branch, for one thing. But another thing is you can't say I appeal to the Supreme Court, because you don't just jump there either.
Mm-hmm.
You appeal to the one that has the authority for the thing that you're talking about.
Right.
So your parking ticket was a municipality, and you had to appeal there.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't appeal to the state on account of that. You couldn't jump that somehow. You know, you had to appeal there. You may
start there.
That's what I mean. You start there. If that doesn't work, you may appeal to a higher court.
Right.
But you have to begin with the jurisdiction that you're
right
under, and the one that has the authority over the issue at hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's parking or whether it's a pandemic,
mm-hmm.
you know, different jurisdiction or different organizations, the state or the municipality there, had jurisdiction, and that's where you go.
Right.
So when you say I appeal to Caesar, you're really talking about I appeal to the one who has a jurisdiction here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know, for some reason that gets sideways, you can appeal to a higher authority. I mean, that's mm-hmm. one of the glories of our situation too, is we do have, you know, some checks and balances, isn't the right word in this situation, but the ability to appeal is one of the glories of our system.
Mm-hmm. And at any level, we have a system set up. We have a constitution at a national level, document, words written down that are the ultimate governing words, as it were, for our governmental structures. And we have an appellate process or an appeals process from the smallest level all the way to, we talked about the Supreme Court of the United States. That's the judicial branch for the national level. How do we interpret the laws against the documents that we have? And it's cool with our system, it could start at a city level. And if the appeal has merit and you have standing, you could appeal all the way from your city level court thing all the way to the Supreme Court based on something with national laws or
in
or a constitution. Yeah.
Well, that happened just yesterday. Did you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So just yesterday, some girl didn't make her cheerleading squad. So she made a short Snapchat video with, you know, several explicitives.
Yeah, things we can't say on this podcast.
Yes, things. we checked the explicit box, so we can't say what she said. But the school district brought suit against her for damaging the school district, and then they didn't win, and so they appealed to a higher court, and they appealed to a higher court, and they got the Supreme Court just yesterday, mm-hmm. and the Supreme Court also sided with the girl, as is her First Amendment right to speak out against the school district. So that just happened yesterday, and it's a really good illustration
yeah.
is because she started it. I mean, she didn't do anything, but this started at the bottom level.
Right,
I mean,
school district level.
School district level,
yeah.
Very lowest level, you might say.
Yeah.
yeah. So
That's
I thought
really
that
good.
Was kind of interesting.
So yeah, there's varying levels. And I think it is helpful to have enough knowledge about the system in which you reside to understand what level you're working in, to understand where am I, how do I do this. I talked about pandemic response, and if you're paying close attention, I heard a lot of people reference the CDC, but in reality, they didn't have the jurisdiction over most of the stuff we were interacting with. A lot of times you would see CDC recommends. The CDC or the federal government couldn't require a lot of things. The things they could usually require had to do with like FCC stuff or flights, interstate things or federal buildings,
mm-hmm.
things like that. Did they hold a lot of political weight? Yes. But at the end of the day, the governing structure for us that we sat under was our state. And for us, that was the OHA. So, and I'm probably giving way too much information, but this is a Q&A and you're going to get all of it. Go ahead.
I mean, I will say you're giving too much information, but I don't know about that. But that does make, I mean, that's what makes this tricky.
Right.
Right? Is that, yeah, there are, you know, a number of moving parts. We're thankful there are a number of moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's what makes this a really good question, is it's
yeah.
not on the face of it always obvious.
Right.
And so when we appeal to Caesar, we want to make sure that we're appealing in the proper way. And if that doesn't work, we can appeal to a higher authority and,
mm-hmm.
you know, until we get all the way to the Supreme Court, I suppose, if that's the nature of the case that we have. But
yeah.
Anyway, I think that's, I just really like the application orientation of this mm-hmm. question.
And I'll say one more, because it's actually an example of us appealing. It's pandemic response again, because we know this really well at this point. But at the beginning, the governor was largely the driver of pandemic response. And I can't remember when it was, but at some point she delegated that authority to the Oregon Health Authority, the OHA. So many times, I'm the life group pastor here. I'm trying to figure out how to help life groups do things. I have appealed to the OHA, literally got on the phone and talked to the people at the OHA. I know you've done that, Scott, or Travis has done that. The elders have done that. We are appealing to the applicable authority to say, hey, we want it to go this way, or we want it to go this way. And sometimes those appeals were met and we got affirmative answers, and sometimes we got answers we didn't want.
And some of it's just clarification too.
Right.
So you're appealing to the right place for the clarification.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in this particular, that was the jurisdiction. That was the place. And one other, I was in a different state recently and talking about how they had to navigate these things, and we were bemoaning the situation a little bit, and they mentioned that they talked to their county health office. Thought, oh, wow, that sounds awesome. I would love to be able to talk to the county health office. In our state, it didn't go that way. Mm-hmm. But in other states, it could have been that we're going to leave this up to the county level, because every county, most every county has a county health official of some sort, and they can run the policy. Mm-hmm. That's not how it worked here. But they were able to go to their office and talk through, hey, here's our plan. Is this okay? Yeah, that's great. And it was a more agreeable plan to me than we could pull off. But they had a different jurisdiction than we did, and they got to appeal to a different jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, good. Well, we get. I mean, that's kind of what we got on the Caesar question. Those are the two instances I think that would show up on Scripture. We got another comment, and Eric, what was that?
We someone sent out. They were reading in their Bible time, daily Bible time, and they sent out a passage that matched some of the things we had already said, and they sent a passage from Daniel 4, and it kind of just dovetails with things we've already talked about. I think it's worth bringing up again. She quoted Daniel 4:25, and this is in the middle of the story. Nebuchadnezzar, if you don't recall, he's the guy that invaded Jerusalem. I just preached on a response to this from Psalm 79, but he invades Jerusalem, kills a bunch of people, takes people out of Israel, and takes them into exile into Babylon. That's Nebuchadnezzar. Not a good dude. But he has a dream, and it's this dream about this big tree that's really large, and then it's going to be knocked down. And he goes to Daniel and says, hey, I want you to interpret this dream. And in Daniel's response, that basically says, hey, you are the tree. You're the big tree that could be seen from miles around, and you're the one that's going to get cut down. And Daniel said, that you shall be driven from among men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. You shall be made to eat grass like an ox, and you shall be wet with the dew of heaven. And 7 periods of time shall pass over you, and this is the purpose of it, till you know that the Most High rules the kingdoms of men and gives it to whom he will. And I just thought that was a really fitting. We've talked about gods. We've talked about different types of government. We've talked about God delegating all those things. And here's just a very obvious example of God communicating that way. I'm the Most High, and I'm going to give these kingdoms to whom I will. And she sent this, and I read that and thought, this is Nebuchadnezzar. Not a good dude. He has killed the people of God. He has taken them into exile. He changed Daniel's name and said, you're going to serve me. And he's one of the ones whom God gave a kingdom to.
I was going to say, God did give him the kingdoms of men.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather have a good king, thank you very much.
Oh, all day long.
And in fact, every person of God would have rather had a different king too.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel's response was not to say, what can we do to hold him accountable? What can we do to resist him? What can we do to change anything? It was, in fact, he asked Daniel, and Daniel was just, oh, king, may this be your enemies and not you, but this is what God says. And the reality is that, the Most High had given him the kingdom, and now the Most High was going to humble him.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think we forget that God can give to whom he wills and humble whom he wills. And we just think that, it's, the world's coming to an end because this person was elected, or this person's in office, or this person did this awful thing. And you know what? I mean, very few have done any more awful thing than Nebuchadnezzar. And the reminder that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to me well is really, really a great thing to remember. And and that's what we're trying to do here in the podcast. We're trying to get people to really be comfortable in the kingdom of heaven, that they do have the Most High King
right.
as their king. And these other lesser kings, lesser presidents, lesser governors, lesser whoever, I mean, God gives it to whom he will. And that's their secondary.
Right.
They'll always be secondary, and God will raise them up and bring them down as he wills. Mm-hmm. And if we would just get that and believe it and be able to rest it in it, I mean, that's what the people of God, that's the advantage the people of God have. You don't have that if you're just a Babylonian.
Right.
If you're the people of God, you have confidence that you have the Most High God on your side, and it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when a secondary or a delegated ruler is not ruling the way you want, there can be a peace there because you know who delegated it to that ruler, to that king. And it's not a permission structure to just go, oh, you're not following the king, I don't have to listen to you. Mm-hmm. That's what Romans 13 is for. If the assumption was otherwise, we wouldn't need Romans 13 at all. But when that does happen, we can have confidence the God of the universe gave this kingdom, and he can humble that ruler now, and at very least he will humble that ruler in the future. Mm-hmm. And this particular example in Daniel 4, Daniel got to see saw Nebuchadnezzar be humbled, and he was humbled. And in a couple verses later, might have been a chapter later, I'm not sure, but you have Nebuchadnezzar worshiping the King of Kings. He's you are right. You are the God. I've been humbled. I'm nothing. And he was humbled in the moment in his own lifetime. And I think if that doesn't happen, and more often than not, we don't see that. We don't get to see those things happen. But I think in the end, these rulers, these leaders, these presidents, governors, city councilors, commissioners, whatever, all of them are going to stand before the King of Kings one day and give an account of how did you rule? How did you steward the things I delegated to you? And they'll be humbled one way or another.
It's probably worth, you mentioned him coming around, right? And Nebuchadnezzar came around. It's probably worth reading what he has to say. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my reason returned to me. I blessed the Most High God and praised and honored him who lives forever. So this is the Most High God who humbled him, praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing. And he does according to his will among the hosts of heaven and among the inhabitants of earth. And none can stay his hand or say to him, what have you done? And
preach, Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, it'd be hard to do better on a sermon than that, wouldn't it? I mean, especially when you're thinking about the kings of men. Who can stay his hand? So whether he lifts Nebuchadnezzar up or brings him down, it's his hand doing it. And no one can look at him and say, what have you done? And I think that's some of even the point of Daniel, is that there is this brokenness on the part of the people of God having just been exiled, and they want to shake their fists and say, God, what have you done? And the reality is here is this humbled pagan king reminding them that the God Most High does, you know, inhabits the heavens and he does whatever he pleases, and no one has a right to ask him, what have you done? So I think that there is this, I just want to say, there is this confidence in belonging to the King of Kings and participating in his kingdom that you just cannot get in an earthly kingdom, in an earthly leader. That's what we're trying to do here, is remind people on a regular basis that there is a king in heaven who does what he pleases, and you are safe with him, and trust him before you trust some other governmental leader or political leader.
That's good. And there should be confidence, listeners, that God has not been taken off guard when you're sitting under some governmental ruler that you don't like or that you're frustrated with or that you can point to, this was a bad idea or this was an unwise idea. God's not been duped. It has not gotten out of his grasp. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we need to be reminded of, especially when we're frustrated, especially when we are tempted towards rebellion rather than submission. Remember that God has not been taken off of guard.
And I think it's worth saying too, because when you start talking like this, like submit instead of rebel, when you don't like something, it's pretty easy for somebody to dismiss you and say, well, that's because you're on the left, or that's because you like that policy or whatever. The whole point is if you don't like it, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about things we don't like. And trust me, there are a lot of things not to like about the way that things are governed right now. I mean, there's some really wacko things going on. And I still have to say, mm-hmm. you know, the Lord is in heaven, and who can stay his hand? Mm-hmm. And he raises up kings and deposes princes, and we're going to be okay. The Church of Jesus Christ is going to be okay.
Yeah. I think there are two passages came to mind when I was reading this that kind of point to that. One day be humbled. If not humbled now, one day will be humbled. Isaiah 9 points out that for to us a child is born, to us a son is given. The government shall be upon his shoulder. And there, Isaiah is talking about Jesus. We know that from the New Testament. His name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end. On the throne of David, Jesus is going to be a king. He's not going to rule in a republic or democratic system. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. And in another passage describing the suffering servant, who is Jesus, it says in 52, kings shall shut their mouths because of him. I think that's partially a response to him being a suffering servant. This servant is going to suffer for the sake of his people. That will put awe in the mouth of a king. But I also think that's future looking. When the government is on his shoulders, the kings will shut their mouths. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm standing before the King of Kings now. Now I realize everything makes sense. Now I realize I've been delegated what I was given, and that gives me a lot of confidence that I don't have to hey little king, make sure you understand. At the end of the day, they're going to understand, and we belong to the King who will make them understand.
And that is the hope of the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why you're talking about the suffering servant. He is the very pinnacle of the gospel. His death and resurrection completely changed the trajectory of human life. And then we get to Revelation, and it talks about how there's no need for a temple and the sun, and because there's the Lamb himself is their light. And by its light, the nations will walk, and the kings of earth will bring their glory into it. Hmm. And, you know, at the end, the kings of the earth are going to bring whatever scrap of glory that they've accumulated, and they are going to be accountable to this King of Kings that we're talking about. So there's just such great hope in that. Mm. And I mean, you think about that. I mean, it's great hope. It's great hope here. We have a good system. We have places to appeal, whether it's, you know, we wouldn't call him Caesar, but we have lots of places to appeal. We don't like paying our taxes to Caesar. We, you know, that's frustrating, but it's really not that bad. There are places in the world, and there have been times in the world where the prospect that in the light of the Lamb, the nations will walk and the kings of earth will bring their glory, you know, into his presence is just stunning, you know, because it's so far from the experience of the people who are, you know, under those little kings.
Mm-hmm. That's a good reminder. And there's good hope there. And I, listeners, I hope you can grab onto that, It's such a better way to walk in the world with that kind of hope attached to your thinking and your posture and your action. So those are some questions. Those were, I hope, helpful. If you have questions or if this spurred another comment or something, send them to podcast@newlifenw.com. We want to answer and we want to be helpful. So if you could do that, it would help some future episode. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and rate us. If you find what we are doing helpful, a review would go a long way to getting this to other people. Share it with a friend. Send it on Instagram or text or however you talk with your friends. Word of mouth, written letter. I don't know how this would work. Please send it to them. Hold them down and beat them up. And with that, we look forward to the next conversation.